Fanboy Smackdown, episode number 58, Atonement. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And we've got I guess this is a full crew now.
It's amazing.
And this is episode number 58. This is released, depending on when exactly
it's
released. Yeah. Adam got me the episode early enough. I fell asleep. That's why... Though that was really only the excuse for one night. The other one, well, I guess I had it out late Tuesday night. It was at like 1:30 a.m.
I didn't even notice it came out until Wednesday. I'm like, oh yeah, we released it.
It was like 1:30 a.m. I think is when it got released, something like that. But if it gets released at 1:30 a.m. on Wednesday next time, that will be the 2-year anniversary of Fanboy Smackdown.
Beautiful.
April 30th.
Yeah, we could forget to edit on Monday.
That's true. April 30th, 2006 was when the first podcast was released. The first episode was released, and I think that's about all we're going to say about the anniversary. Except
I want to give a shout out. It'll be my brother's birthday, so happy birthday,
oh, okay.
Armin, when you hear this.
Who appeared in episode 3?
He did.
Batman was never invited back.
No. Well, I think he was afraid to reveal that he actually was Batman.
Yeah, that's
so
true. I figured he just couldn't give up the phone. It was his phone that rang that day.
That's right. If I remember correctly. 6 times he had a date or something.
He actually gave... We had to cut him giving out his phone number on the podcast.
Yes, that's true. He was like, all right, girls, and if anyone wants to take me out, I'm at blah, blah, blah. And we were like, dude, you're Batman. You can't just give your number out.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's just like giving his number out on the internet just to pick up chicks.
What was the movie? Because I haven't heard this one.
Batman.
Oh.
We talked about the... Oh. It was episode 3, and we talked about Batman Begins versus Michael Keaton's Batman, just comparing and contrasting. Okay. This is back when Fanboy Smackdown was still about trying to... be a Fanboy Smackdown kind of thing. It was after that episode that we realized, we've only talked about movies.
Yeah.
So, I guess this kind of segues into the big announcement we were going to do, and that's...
Whoa! We need the music now. Announcement music.
Dun, dun, dun! Yes, we've been... Anybody who's seen me on Twitter, I've been teasing about this, and it somehow... I don't even remember how it happened... But this is what Geist Bear from Twitter is referring to as Operation... what is it? Airship Laser Dino Shark. Yeah.
Twitter crew is a weird crew.
Yes, they are. They're a weird group. But, they're mostly good people. I've actually gotten a lot of opportunities for the podcast through that group. Just being available immediately to speak to people and such. Mm-hmm. But, so big announcement is very soon. We're not sure the exact date.
You're just announcing the announcement.
I'm going to announce the announcement. Okay. Well, very soon. We don't know the exact date yet because we're still getting all our ducks in a row. But because people only listen to certain episodes.
Okay.
And we will probably announce this in the next couple just... Because,
right.
Our regular crew isn't going to listen to an episode about Atonement. we're going to get like 12 people downloading this episode.
An episode about Atonement.
Well, there you go.
By the way, I just wanted to let everyone know this episode is about Atonement.
We're going to talk about Atonement later. We're atoning from last week's episode.
The Nevsky fans are going to be delighted to hear that we're going to be covering Atonement this week.
I'm sure they will. We're going to change the name of the podcast. Fanboy Smackdown is no more.
So
well, we kept getting derailed, and we're just jagging around at this point. So figured I'd just throw it out there.
Yeah.
Fanboy Smackdown is no more. probably in the next month or so. The name of the podcast is going to change, and we are going to be called The Backseat Producers.
None of the original hosts from Fanboy Smackdown will be killed or injured in any way during this process.
That's still up for debate.
I think the name is clever, but I think the subtitle
You did invite me back. I figured I was going to be coming back for some reason.
And the subtitle. Do you remember the subtitle exactly?
The subtitle is Two Guys Who Don't Know Anything About Filmmaking But Know What's Wrong. I don't remember. Something like that.
What's right and wrong and what Hollywood's doing right and wrong something to that effect.
Something like that. It's clever and funny when we actually know what it is.
Yes, it is clever and funny. Well, mostly because it came from T. Morris.
Well, T is a wellspring of great ideas.
Actually, the name of the podcast was a suggestion from T. Morris, and we took it. Yeah. It was a good idea.
If he wants it back, he can't have it.
Nope. So. I have already registered the domain, so suck it.
Yeah. W.T.
So we're going to change the name. There's no big mystery to it. The name of this podcast has hindered new listenership, and people hear the words Fanboy Smackdown and they don't necessarily think movie review and analysis podcast, where we talk about movies like
Atonement.
If it makes you feel any better, I hate the name Fanboy Smackdown because it's four letters of an acronym and not three.
And now it is three.
Yes.
Playing drink with my cam, microphone.
Drink Cam Q right now.
Cam, yeah.
I'm just way too impressed with my microphone.
Yeah.
It is pretty impressive.
It is.
I also like the gold goblets we have now. I really got to tell you, the studio is a lot nicer, too. A lot of things have changed around here.
There have been some improvements.
Yeah.
We've stopped slumming.
Yeah, it's crazy. Is that tiger real?
Yes, it is.
It's amazing.
Well, after we signed our first multi-million deal, I mean,
What do you feed it?
We had to splurge.
I don't know.
People, bad movies.
Oh, we've seen some of them.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I guess we should probably talk about a movie.
Right. What movie should we talk about, Tony?
I'm not sure. I'm still kind of buzzed over the last conversation. My brain's still kind of in the fog over that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, we're talking about Atonement. So this is the third, I guess, in our series of Oscar-nominated movies from the 2007-2008 Academy Awards. Atonement. What do you guys got? I know you've been waiting to talk about this, or not.
Oh, I was so bored. I was so bored.
After the first 15 hours, it gets pretty interesting, actually.
I will agree with you.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think the payoff is great. Don't get me wrong.
It picks up, it really does pick up toward the end.
Yeah, it does. But getting there is such
it's slow.
A fight.
I actually really enjoyed the whole movie, minus a few things that I thought were just flaws, you know, in terms of filmmaking, storytelling flaws. But I actually really enjoyed the film, and maybe it has to do with the fact that I saw it with my fiance at the time, and it is basically a romance. So it provides a different context than if you're watching it for the purposes of just analysis, you know.
Well, I saw it for the purposes of analysis.
Right.
And it was in the middle of watching four other movies that day.
Well, I can imagine.
I don't know how you did that.
Yeah.
Now I've seen all five of the movies. I don't think I couldn't have watched them all back to back.
Oh man, it was interesting. It's not like watching it's not like watching a marathon of Star Wars or the movies have all such divergent themes, genres, styles, levels of interest.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, really. And I've done this 2 years in a row now. And it's tough. It is really tough. And I almost wish they would work out a way to show it over two Saturdays or, a series of evenings. because it's just, I mean, it's a lot to digest in one sitting. And you do it the day before. It's, I mean, it makes it such that, you know, especially with some of these movies, you know, it's taken a day or two being away from them to really let them sink in and digest them. And
right.
Did I really like that movie or not?
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming
and from. And so I'm just getting to the point where I'm starting to formulate my ideas for the movie, and they're telling me which one's the best based on, you know, the Academy Awards. And so that was kind of rough. When I finished that day, the next day, I actually thought that Atonement, my pick was that Atonement was going to win the Oscar. Not that I thought it was the best movie, but I thought that it was the kind of movie
that they look for.
And because I think it was, of the movies I saw that day, it was definitely in the top three for what a good Oscar-worthy movie is. I didn't think Michael Clayton was worthy of an Oscar. It's a little bit too pedestrian. I didn't think Juno was worthy of an Oscar, kind of for the same reason. I thought Atonement could win an Oscar. I thought... There Will Be Blood could win an Oscar, and I thought No Country for Old Men should win an Oscar because that was a good movie.
I was actually
that was
surprised
a really good movie
because Atonement and There Will Be Blood are the kind of period pieces that Oscar people tend to just, you know,
yes,
lavish over whether they're actually any good or not.
Oscar tended to. But they don't do that anymore. I mean, they've moved away from that the last couple of years.
I think sometimes it was interesting. I think sometimes they go through a period where they're just trying to reward certain types of movies to keep those films relevant in a way to the art form. You don't want to diverge the Oscars from you know box office relevance. And
right.
I think that's somewhat of what's been happening. I think Silence of the Lambs and Unforgiven were the last 1-2 punch of awesome movies that won Best Picture before Departed and No Country for Old Men. I mean, in terms of thrillers and violence and actually, you know, being less moody affairs, you know, or meditative affairs.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time two movies that were so full of, you know, action or the kinds of things that actually most moviegoers actually want to see, you know.
Right.
Creepy guy. Huh? Moviegoers want to go see creepy guy.
Yeah.
Creepy guy better.
Yeah, you know, and you know.
A creepy guy with the Dorothy Hamill haircut.
I don't like necessarily being preached, you know, to in a movie, which
yeah.
is, I think, a lot of what Oscars have been doing, but... You know, now that we've had some good old nihilistic pictures where a bunch of people die and there's no resolution, I feel like Oscar's back on the right track again.
I think that sums it up very nicely.
It's lost when things not working out for you.
Okay, so back to Atonement.
You said that you thought that you assumed that Atonement was going to win.
Yeah. I liked the movie. I agree that it was a little slow at the beginning. I wasn't crazy about the nonlinear storytelling because I don't think it really added that much to it. Because it did, there was a couple of jumps in time,
right?
And it really didn't solve to build a lot of mystery. I mean, there was a little bit where
when you say
you
nonlinear,
see,
do you mean
chronologically? I mean, it didn't go from A to B to C to D. I mean, it jumped around a little. Yeah, and then and then came back to B.
Right. Okay.
I mean, and I guess it added a little bit to it, but...
Yeah, I thought it was unnecessary.
Yeah, it really felt unnecessary.
It's confusing. I was watching it with Melina, and she's like, is this the same thing we just watched? And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
It's the same thing we just watched, only the camera's closer now.
Right.
And she's wearing underwear now.
Yeah.
Well, I think on that point, there is a logic to the continuity.
Yeah, I mean,
of
there is
flashbacks because what it really does is it sets you up for the idea that the entire thing is a flashback as she perceives it. And whether you buy that, I think is a huge, it's a huge thing they have to sell, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
But I think if there was no flashbacks prior to that, that were, you know, her perspective and then in some ways a fantasy of what she...
Be careful.
Well, all right. Are we not... Are we not?
We're not spoiling right now.
Oh, okay.
So be careful.
Well, you know, in short, I really liked the A to B structure of the film.
Okay.
I think I'm going to get one more beer so these guys can cover this part of the show.
You want to start with your plot synopsis?
Okay, the plot synopsis. I don't remember any of the characters' names.
Neither do I.
Because I don't remember any characters' names for that day at all.
They're in the crib.
Yeah, they're all the way down at the bottom.
I don't remember any of the characters'
names
either.
So,
but that's...
Yeah.
I was like fading in and out of consciousness.
Guy.
It was so boring.
And who was that? Was it...
Keira Knightley?
Well, Keira Knightley, but who was the guy? Was that McAvoy?
James McAvoy.
That's what I thought, James McAvoy.
Yeah.
Which will make this at least easier because I can name actors. James McAvoy works for Keira Knightley's family as, I guess, like a gardener. Or he did, and now he's back in town.
He's going to be a doctor. He's going to school.
Yeah, he's going away to school. She's annoyed at him about it.
But she wants him.
But she wants him. And basically, the hook of the movie revolves around him wanting to tell her that he likes her, that he really does have feelings for her. So in a fit of not knowing what to say, he writes something that perhaps he shouldn't. Well, not that he shouldn't, because he has no intention of giving it to her. He had no intention of giving it to her. And it was a lark, and it was, we're not going to mark this one explicit because we had enough explicit last episode.
Oh,
yeah, it was pretty bad.
But, needless to say, he drops a word that we're not dropping here that would
exactly
make us be explicit.
Yes, I mean, and it's a word I don't believe we've ever dropped on this podcast, and I doubt we ever will. And we've dropped some words on this podcast, especially last week. So he...
I heard you use the word Twitter this week. I don't know what that means.
It means about the same thing as the word we're avoiding saying now.
Oh, man.
So I believe he says he wants to kiss her there or something like that. And
he says something.
Something like that. Anyway, her girly parts. Anyway... He folds this note up and puts it to the side, and then writes
up an actual note.
Then he puts together the actual note,
a sweet gentlemanly letter.
Yeah, that he wants to meet with her
of admirable quality.
Yes, and the note falls into the hands of Keira Knightley's little sister, who is apparently a little infatuated with James McAvoy's character, and. She basically
reads the note.
Yeah, she reads the note, and
it's of course
he put the wrong one in.
Yeah, he gets the wrong one goes, and he tries to go for the mad dash after her.
Yeah.
And this all happens early on in the movie, and it's not a huge spoiler because you know that something's coming up that is a call for the name of the movie for Atonement. And any synopsis of the movie tells you that something bad happens. Well, here's what bad happens. It's not that big a deal. It sets up the rest of the flick. So all of this occurs. They get busted making out, probably considered more than making out in the library. They were doing it against the wall in the library with a candlestick.
The candlestick.
Colonel Mustard. I was just going to say, was he there?
No, we're not going to talk about Clue this time.
That's a good movie. Anyway.
This is for Lloyd's finest performance.
Yes.
Except for the Klingon in the Star Trek movie.
Oh.
Anyway. God, this is going to have as many references as the episode we did with T.
I thought we weren't going to be Fanboy SmackDown anymore, but it seems that we'll probably end up there anyway.
Hey, you know, it's still all talking about movies.
Right. It's true.
It's still all
true.
Movies. So then an incident happens, and there's a couple of other characters that get introduced and end up playing a larger role as the story goes on. But anyway, there's a situation something is seen. Somebody sees someone having sex
Well, actually, back it up a little. These two kids are missing. So everybody.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Everybody goes out looking for him, and the McAvoy dude goes off. Keira Knightley's little sister already thinks that this dude is crazy sex pervert because she read this note.
Exactly. And caught them doing things in the library.
And caught them doing it. So everybody's out looking for these two twins.
Colonel Mustard could not console her, at least.
Lead pipe could not console her.
Oh, no.
So her little sister is wandering about, and she finds like one of her friends being raped by Mysterious Stranger.
Right.
Which is, of course, who she assumes is.
Which she says is McAvoy. Well, they go back. The police are called in because the boys are still missing. McAvoy's missing. The girl's been attacked.
Yeah.
And so everybody at that point is sure that he has done it. In more ways than one.
But mostly it is, it relies on her testimony. And she, I think, exhibits in that. Now, maybe this is, you know, obvious point of the episode. But
yeah, well,
I think
this,
she exhibits
a
fair amount of animosity towards him over the way he feels about
If you watch the Oscars, this is the scene where they're interrogating her is the scene that they play when they nominate her for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah,
right.
The Academy Awards this year was so infuriating because I had seen these movies, and I've talked about, I can't help but talk about this every damn time. They play the climactic point of every character during their nomination little video, or they show the climax of the movie during the movie's nomination. During Michael Clayton.
Well, they do need to show important...
You need to show important things.
Yeah, but don't ruin the movie.
You don't need to ruin the freaking movie.
Well, the great thing about Michael Clayton is if you watch the first 10 minutes of it, the movie is already ruined. So you don't have to worry about them giving anything away.
So, so she says he did it. She saw him, even though she's... come on, we've killed that joke.
All right.
Boy, it just got really quiet.
Well, yeah, my sixth grader mentality almost took over there for a second.
I don't have a seventh grader mentality, so.
And I think mine's dropping the more bourbon I drink. I forget where I was. So
he comes back.
He comes back with the boys.
With the boys. And
He's expecting that he's going to be, you know, the returning hero. Hey, I've got the boys.
I mean, he just hooked up with Keira Knightley. Things are going to him
pretty well.
Yes. I mean, yeah. He hooked up.
That was great. So he comes back. He's all happy. Like, everybody is standing on the stoop just looking at him. He's like, what?
That was really good.
That was a great scene.
So we find out that
everyone in the theater was laughing, by the way, when that happened.
So
I guess that is one thing I can say about this movie. Like, the build up is so slow, but the payoff is really good.
It's really once it gets to that point, things start really moving better.
They start jumping forward.
Right. And really that's everything up to that point is really setting up the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
You need every bit of it that's there. It's a little slow, but you need everything that's there to finish the movie.
There's not only a plot reason for all that exposition. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it is a war movie. And a lot of it was demonstrating how these people lived
before
the war and how they were living after the war.
Well, and that's
a lot of time, a lot of free time.
Well, yeah, and I think, but I think that all speaks to everything that happens after that. You need all of that.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, it doesn't feel as tragic.
Right.
When we get to the war, I have some thoughts about the war that are going to be spoilery. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think once we get past the point, I mean, at this point, she testifies against him. He goes to jail. Flash forward, I think it's like 5 years?
Something like that.
It's something like that.
It's some amount of years.
Yeah, but it's something like five, or it's not 10, it's more than five, less than 10 years. Mm. The young girl is now late teens. Everybody else is a little bit older. And the next time we see James McAvoy, he is at war. And we know that something happened in the in-between time. Very quickly through exposition, we find out that he was in prison. The only way he could get out of prison was to enlist. And so he's at war because he figures, this is my chance at getting out of prison and redeeming myself.
World War II, by the way.
Yes, yes. And Keira Knightley is a nurse. Wait a minute. No, her sister's a nurse.
She's also
They're both nurses. They're both nurses working in the war effort. And I'm leery of going any farther than that.
Because I think
that pretty much sets up everything to that point. And we're about halfway through the movie at this point.
Right.
Everything else that happens.
It's felt like an eternity at this point, though.
In general terms, in broad strokes, I think that getting to this point is slow, but I think it really is necessary to tell the rest of the story that's told. And the rest of the story, for my money, was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
Because you know that when you do, I'll talk you out of it in the spoiler section.
No, I have other thoughts on. I want to talk about the spoilers of the movie because I don't know the parts of the movie that were not spoiler related that we've already talked about. I found really boring.
That's fair. That's fair. I enjoyed it for what it was. I think some of the imagery and just in general terms, some of the imagery at the end of the movie. Especially, and this isn't really giving anything away, the scenes of the guys on the beach, the
that
war scenes on
was
the beach,
awesome.
That looked and felt like a completely different movie.
Yes,
that's kind of the problem with that shot. Is that
it was so different?
It's not those shots. It's that one shot.
It's a single
all
shot.
Across. That was freaking.
That was brilliant.
And it was
like the whole movie was made for that one shot.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah,
but it wasn't. I mean, kind of like you have the Matrix. That's made. You know, the whole movie is made for Neo falling backwards.
Right,
for that one bullet scene. This movie felt like it was. I mean, if it was the same kind of movie, it would be made for that one sweeping shot of the beach. But the story that they framed around that one sweeping shot of the beach was a pretty good story.
Yeah,
you know, it was that was just a really cool moment in a good movie.
Yeah. What I
but
really,
it, but it really felt different. It didn't was, feel
it
like the
totally
same movie.
Totally different tone than the
yeah.
rest of the movie.
That particular scene is about the Battle of Dunkirk, which I don't know anything about the British, you know, war with Nazi Germany. All I know about is, you know, what the Americans, you know, did and all that. So that was interesting because there's a lot of details in that shot where, you know, dogs are barking and, you know, generals are shooting their horses. And you don't really understand the context of it all if you don't understand what happened. But that was basically a pullout, essentially.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. It was like you're watching them pretty much decapitate their own forces so they can get the essentials out. And all of the, I guess, collateral damage that's a result of that. And then yet at the same time, there's some kind of really morbid party going on. I mean, just like,
yeah.
there's like a carnival scene on the beach and people are drinking and there's a Ferris wheel and it's just,
It was a
bizarre thing I've ever seen.
It was, yeah, I was gonna say it was. It's a very surreal,
unbelievable. The whole movie's music was awesome, but that particular scene, it does feel like it's very disconnected from the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
definitely. That was a great scene though. I didn't like most of the movie, but that scene was freaking fantastic.
Yeah, and just.
And that's not something you talked me
just into in the filmography. Fair enough. So there, suck it. Okay. Let's go ahead and just cut it off here. Yep. We're gonna go spoilery after the break. So see you guys in a minute.
West Side, no. Dark. Damn it.
You look a little beat.
This voice for William Shakespeare is hard to nail. Listen. Sive, tis I, Will. We are about to face...
To Rafe.
All right. Why, Sive, tis I, Will. We are about to fish...
To classic Bond. Also too Scottish.
See what I mean?
Well, think about it. This is Chasing the Bard, an epic fantasy from award-nominated author Philippa Ballantyne. This is a tapestry.
Okay, a tapestry.
Yes, a tapestry of magic, light and dark, of intrigue, and sex.
Sex?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I got it. Sive, tis I, Will.
Oh, very nice.
We are about to face our destiny. This may be my last chance to let you know my heart, to ask you what I must know. Do I make you horny, Sive? Come on, do I? I'm William Shakespeare, baby, yeah. Let's come on and get our iambic pentameter mojo on, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you're on to something here.
Yeah, Sive, I got your hey nonny nonny, baby, yeah. I'll behave.
Chasing the Bard. William Shakespeare in his own Midsummer Nightmare. And if I'm not careful, my own. Find out more at chasingthebard.com. Now, boys, behave, or I will be greatly displeased.
And we're back. And
spoiler time.
Spoiler time. If you have not seen Atonement and you wish to...
Wait. Do we have any announcements? What are we doing next week? We doing There Will Be Blood next week?
Sure, why not?
Good. Because I want to talk about that movie.
Okay. We can do There Will Be Blood next week. Other announcement, we do have a contest going on for Alien Nation Ultimate DVD Collection. The Ultimate Movie Collection. Go to the contest page. The contest is running until May 5th. So just go to the contest page on the website. I'm not going to say anything else. You'll find all the information there. We will be reviewing the one or more of the movies from that between the podcast and the text reviews. We all have copies of it, so we'll be talking about it and such. Between talking about it and having text posted about it. So check that out probably within the next week or so. We'll start seeing some of those. Talked to Jake today, and he says he'll put it out there. Yeah, maybe if what he says is true, by the time this posts, it should be out there. I don't know if we should hold him to that or not.
He wants to move to St. Louis. I'll tell him no.
You can't move until you start posting reviews.
No. Have you hit him with a roll-up newspaper? No.
Okay. So, spoilers, I know you want to talk now.
There are movies that end properly, and this was one of them. I thought the ending was brilliant.
You know, I thought the movie was merely okay until the ending.
I thought the movie was terrible until the ending.
When all of a sudden, it's modern day, I'm like... Did we get the wrong reel? Is this the same movie we're watching?
Exactly.
Or?
That is when the movie really turned for me.
I actually almost had the opposite opinion, but it took me a day for the movie to sink in.
Okay.
I invested a lot in the characters. I enjoyed the movie up to that point.
Yeah.
the point in which the film derails and becomes a completely different thing and a half fantasy. It took me a long time to buy that. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, you know, I really like that movie. Do I buy the ending? And it took me a long time to think about the narrative structure of the film and mm-hmm. and how it progressed and buy it and think that, yes, that was a great ending. But it took me a couple of days to figure that out.
You know, the Oscars this year had the five movies. Two of the movies were named after characters in the movie. The other three names of the films were literal what happens in the movies.
Right.
Yes.
There Will Be Blood,
Atonement,
and No Country for Old Men
are definitely characters.
And just even the title.
Sorry. My mistake.
Dick. I'm going to go explicit yet on this.
And it's all like the last 5 minutes of the movie.
And they all tie together with the title.
Yep.
And just knowing the title and knowing seeing the last 5 minutes of the movie, it all makes sense. It all clicks.
And you know what? Because I was watching the movie, and it gets to the point where it flips back to Keira Knightley's younger sister, and she's older, and she's like, "Oh, I did something, and it sucked." And I was like, "Ooh, big atonement." And then it flips to the end, and I was like, "Whoa, that is awesome."
Yes.
All right, you win. Oh, I had atonement. You win.
I don't know,
maybe
you would have thought, watching the Battle of Dunkirk scene, that he was atoning for the first half of the movie with that shot.
I know. That shot was so awesome.
That shot was incredible.
But the whole war was that big backdrop of her struggle with what she did.
Oh, yeah. The movie's full of metaphor like that. I mean, the war was just the big one.
Yeah.
You know, the big conflict, the big thing that had to change, and the big change in the world. I mean, it all was there. Everything's changing, you know. The spoiler section, I think, for this movie is actually probably going to be a lot smaller by comparison to some of the other movies where it's like we hurry up to get to the spoiler.
I mean, because
everything builds up to the end.
Yeah.
And everything, I mean, you know, really we could go on telling the rest of the story, which, you know, he's in the war, she's back home, they apparently have some time together. Which, did they or didn't they have that time together now? It really throws into question a lot of the detail of what's going on. And after the fact, once we get the reveal that this is all a book that the younger sister has written, that is telling the story.
Right. Telling the story that we've seen.
That we've seen. That everything up to this point is actually, we're watching a movie that is based on the book that she's written that frames the whole movie.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of hard to describe without really seeing it.
And they're very wise to use in the beginning of the film that typewriter.
You know, it bugged me.
You don't know why it's there. You think it's just an artistic flourish that's kind of excessive.
Well, I thought it was, I mean, there were little things that made sense. You know, and the whole thing makes even more sense when you look back at the character of the young girl who's writing plays.
Right.
And it's like,
yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she's a writer.
Oh, knows.
And the atonement comes up in
type.
Type, you know.
Yeah.
And all the music is framed through the first half of the movie with the typewriter is used as an instrument.
Yeah.
Which kind of bugged me
at first.
It did. It really annoyed me.
Consciousness actually plays out in one sequence. She's got, you got this typewriter going, and you've got her mind just going. All these details. Mm. And you can't even make sense of most of them, you know.
Mm.
And it's really a film that takes place inside her head, which is it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah, I mean,
about it
when you come back to it after seeing the whole thing, it all has a little more cool to it.
Yeah, it does.
there is a little more cool, especially to the slower beginning.
That's why I said that the payoff is just freaking fantastic.
Yes,
I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan.
Mm-hmm.
What does that have to do with Atonement? Well, I'm going to get into it. There's a film called I'm Not There, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about Bob Dylan, five different people, pretty much takes place inside Bob Dylan's head.
Right.
I like the movie, but I would not say classically that it's a great movie. Because it's very self-conscious about that. The beauty of Atonement is it pulls it off without even making you aware of it, uses it as the twist, and strengthens the story.
Yep.
Absolutely.
The whole story with that twist. Much more effective in doing that than the film which about Dylan, which pretty much kind of reminds you about every 5 minutes, hey, this film's all happening in Bob Dylan's head, people. I mean, this is actually a much better, more nuanced, you know, film in terms of, I don't know what you call it, postmodern storytelling, I guess? I guess. I mean, sure.
I don't know, we can say that.
Yeah, sure.
Postmodern storytelling, come on.
Absolutely.
Well, where, you know,
what are you going to do? Narrative. What are you going to do, look it up on Wikipedia? We'll change Wikipedia before the episode comes out.
We're warning you, Wikipedia. But, well, objective storytelling is pretty much, you know, leaving. You know, I mean, more and more these films are becoming subjective, multiple narrative, out, you know, time sequencing out of joint.
Yeah.
You know, this is happening more and more with films. And
uh-huh.
I don't know if you want to call it postmodern or subjective, but this is some of the most effective subjective storytelling. All right. Wow. I better just go back to telling jokes, and you guys can talk about the movie from here on.
No, I totally know what you're saying, though. I have not seen a movie like this.
Yeah.
I'm not qualifying that. That was a single statement. You're absolutely right with whatever the hell you just said.
I don't know what you said, little man. You know, we said earlier that the war scene felt out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Written from a romantic point of view by someone who wasn't there, that makes sense.
You're right.
It really does make sense. Yeah. If you look at it in the larger context, that scene was written and the way they framed it, just by following it through and seeing right. all the little moments, it's how you do it in a single narrative while you're reading a book.
Yeah.
You'd get all those little moments in there with the guys drinking, the Ferris wheel, all the imagery, and of them just kind of walking through it all, just to describe that moment. That's exactly how you'd read it in a book. And it makes more sense in that it really does kind of fit now. That where, in the context of the film, it really didn't fit until you understand why it was done that way.
Right. Yeah, that looking back, that even makes that scene even cooler.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
I didn't think that was possible, but here we are. Thanks, Tony.
I did that.
Yeah, thank you.
What we don't really know right now is that this whole podcast is actually just taking place inside Tony's head.
Everyone does. Every single episode does. Me and my bottle of bourbon. Curled up in the corner, playing this podcast in my head.
Did I ever say anything else about this? Because it was like, I was really happy at the end.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, they live, blah, blah, blah. They got back together and they had some time. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, the end was like, oh, that's kind of cheesy.
Painful road. And then she's like, no, he died. I was like,
whoa. And she died.
And I was like, boom. All right, then.
Hang on. Here comes the forehand and the backhand.
Yep. I was like, bam, damn.
It really was quite poignant. I mean, once you find out that they die, you think, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's like the saddest thing I've ever seen. Like, if they would have died in like real time, it would have been like, it's really sad. But then when you think they work it out, and then and then it's like, guess what?
They provide the illusion of like, oh, they lived happily ever after. Oh, nope, they died. I was like, whoa, all right, hey, why you lying to me? That's not cool.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it actually gave you a little bit of a moral question at the end. Was it the right thing to do to tell the story that way? Was it the right thing to do to tell the story ingenuously, so that she could feel better about herself,
right? Or even or
to,
maybe
just to
even,
give it a happy ending, even though to give them the happy ending they never had, which I think was kind of what I mean,
well, what
more
said.
Or less what
my,
she says.
My atonement is that I gave them the happy ending that I denied them.
Right.
But does it even do anything? I think is another question. Like, does the is the
right,
atonement
right. is it worthwhile? Because
right,
right.
She
yeah.
made a whole bunch of money off the book, anyways.
Well, yeah. You know. Yeah, you know. I got my atonement right here, bitch.
I can buy forgiveness for $20,000.
Bam.
But yeah, you're right. I thought that was friggin' brilliant.
Oh. You know it, and we didn't say we didn't say this in the review section. But if I mean if you're to this point and you haven't seen the movie, I say go watch it. I mean even
the only
even
way
with,
you can atone for having listened this yeah. long is to just go see the movie at this point.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely worth watching. I think it's definitely worth watching again. I mean I will see it again.
I kind of wish
just
because
just because I want to see more. I want to see if there's more there that lends it to being that hints at being a book, that hints of this being a story that you should have read instead of something that you should have seen on the screen, which is a really weird dynamic because people always complain about, you know, it's, you know, reading the book versus seeing the movie.
To actually read the book.
Oh, is it a book?
Yeah, it's a book. It's by Ian McEwan, who apparently is like the greatest British writer in modern times, or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, even the scene.
Well, he is, if you say it in a voice like that, it just becomes yeah, fact.
He is the greatest British writer in modern times.
Even the scenes in the beginning, where they're in the mansion, and she's kind of looking out, and she's like, oh, there's that guy and my sister doing stuff, and they're talking and stuff. That's exactly how you would read it in a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She looks out, and she sees some scene off in the distance, and it gives you absolutely no detail, but then it picks up with another character who walks into that scene.
Right.
That's exactly how you would read it.
Which my complaint about it being disjointed
went away.
It would, yes. Yeah. It goes away with that.
Right.
And that's the part that
because it's really not disjointed. It's how you're reading it.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's also how her mind works.
Well, it's a first person narrative. It's not or a third person limited. You know, from a writing standpoint, you're not taking an omniscient viewpoint where you see everything.
I thought that was interesting because you're right. It actually is a first-person narrative. See, I was thinking that it was essentially the narrative structure of the film, not necessarily
right.
the book, that it's foreshadowing the ending by creating situations where she perceives it one way, it occurs another way, she perceives something one way, it occurs another way, and then the whole film occurred another way, but you see it how she perceived it first. But actually, you're saying that that's the way the book actually
that's the way
would
the
be
book
too.
Would be written, yeah.
So it kind of works on two levels.
Exactly.
In its own way, it's
gentlemen,
cool.
Let me take this intellectualism to the next level up and say, I was screwed out of my Keira Knightley tight white dress scene
you,
the second
you,
time around.
That's, yeah.
From
yeah.
afar, and then
yeah.
Oh, here we go. And then she's like wearing more clothes the second time. She's like, God damn it.
Yep, I hear you.
I got screwed out of my Keira Knightley half-nude scene.
I hear you, man.
Sorry, guys. I don't know. We don't know
no,
about
no.
PhDs.
No, but no, that's okay. Poor helpless drunk. Yes, I do have one of those degrees.
I think we all do after this episode.
You win, sir.
We're talking about a British film, people. We gotta act like it's deep. I mean,
whether it is or not.
Come on. It's the greatest film in modern times.
Okay. We have a little bit of time left. The acting. I thought the acting was good.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that I agree with that. I mean, my complaints were more with what happened, not how it was delivered.
Which, I mean,
because Keira Knightley was good.
Good acting. I think I don't think it was there was anything there to make it spectacular.
Right.
There was nothing really to make it there wasn't enough meat there to give anyone a spectacular performance.
But at the same time,
the fact that you don't notice mistakes, you don't notice bad acting, it was good by there not being any problems.
I think one of the things that bothered me the lady who plays the younger sister who wrote the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
Sarah,
Well, yeah, she's, which one?
The middle one. The one where she's a nurse, she's
okay.
A doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a... This might just be a little flaw, but it really bothered me that she had the same haircut in, like, every frame of her life. And it just bothered me. And I thought, is this hamstringing the actors, or is it because the lady in the middle was too weak to play that character appropriately, so they had to...
I can tell you exactly why it is.
Okay.
I can tell you exactly why it is. Because the story is written in first person, and the first person never describes how they look.
Okay.
So once you have a description in your head, the person always looks the same.
Always looks the same.
From the haircut and everything. I mean, that's really the only way I can...
Okay.
The only decent explanation I can have for it, considering everything else that they've really tried to make work.
But do you think that was really a conscious decision?
I don't know.
I think it was
because they do this a lot. I'm a big fan of anime, and they do this a lot in anime. Is that
don't apologize for it?
I'm not apologizing.
I didn't hear you say that you were sorry for being a big fan of anime. But
one of the big ways that they identify the characters because all of them look the same is by their haircut. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just what they were doing, just saying, "Well, this is this chick." And now she's older, but she still has the same haircut.
So the problem, well,
yeah, since they have the same actors for James McAvoy and Keira Knightley, and
right.
It's a feature length film. I mean, it's not a half hour episode. So when the guy becomes evil, he doesn't grow a mustache like in a half hour episode.
What I want to know in the good universe, are there three guys without goatees sitting around a table podcasting about a movie?
Maybe. I don't know what they were podcasting about.
I know.
Probably knocked up. But anyway.
Knocked up. I like knocked up.
Tittering the whole time because they're good.
Yeah.
Tee-hee.
We don't have knocked up situations in our world. This movie is so off the wall.
I was going to say something that would probably end up making it explicit again, though.
It's hard to come off that explicit
thing. Yeah, it is.
There's been a couple times where I'm like, friggin'.
We could always go Battlestar Galactica and say frack.
Frack?
That works in BSG.
That's about it.
I'll tell you what's really interesting, and get ready to edit this, Adam. But in Ireland, feck is not edited out of television.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say that.
You can say the full F-bomb in,
really?
In Britain. Yeah,
oh,
on the BBC. On the BBC?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, if you watch BBC, I watch MI5, which over there is called Spooks.
Okay.
Apparently we can't call it that here. Yeah, can't imagine why.
Well, you know.
But yeah, they dropped the F-bomb. And I mean that was stuff that was broadcast on the air. It's not like it was a special edit for the DVDs
that's
or anything.
Because I watch Doctor Who pretty regularly, like a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I've yet to hear any profanity. But I guess that may be just more style of the show, though.
Do you watch the DVDs, like the full length British stuff?
Well, actually, I watch the BBC releases. I don't watch the sci-fi releases.
And see, I don't think I think Doctor Who is a little more.
It's more family oriented.
Family oriented. And especially the new Sarah Jane Adventures. That's definitely... It's
it has
definitely...
K-9.
Yeah.
Come on.
I have no problem with that.
I have K-9. Doctor Who is all about the intentional campiness. But there, K-9 is that line that I cannot cross.
See, I'm thinking... But I'm thinking Sarah Jane Adventures may be the way for me to initiate Holden into the...
The Doctor.
Yeah. Make him a Whovian.
I gotta use the
Doctor Whoniverse.
I like it.
So, Atonement. I
recommend it.
Good flick.
Yeah, I would go see it. I mean,
you did.
Yeah, I guess I did. Yeah, I would go see it.
You would recommend.
I would recommend you go see it.
There you go. Have another beer.
There's a list in my head of the top. Five movies of last year, and that was one of them. It's probably number four.
What else was on the list?
I thought Jesse James was the best movie of the year, and then Zodiac, and then No Country for Old Men, which is the one that won Best Picture.
Yep.
And then Atonement, and then Probably, I like the Bob Dylan movie because I'm a fan, but I can't say honestly that a whole lot of other people would like it. So I don't know really where I come down on that, but...
That's fair.
Well, the acting in that is supposed to be incredible.
Well, you know, I mean, Cate Blanchett is the best Bob Dylan
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what I heard, because she was supposed to be...
Yeah, and Heath Ledger isn't a lot like Bob Dylan, but he kind of has the best part.
Okay. You know? I mean, not to go on a Heath Ledger wank because he's dead, but... I mean, that dude was good. I thought that dude was good before he died.
Yeah.
Everybody said he was good, so...
You know, one of the really cool things... Julie watches E! A lot, and they have that show, The Soup, where they basically just lambast everything.
Right.
They're
funny.
We watched it. It's funny stuff. We watched it the weekend after they announced Heath Ledger's dead, and he gets on there and says, you know, and we just want to make mention because it is in the news that Heath Ledger has passed away, and we can honestly say that we have never talked about him before on this show because he was an honestly good guy, and that was all they said. And it was just like, that was a really cool moment for a show that basically just jacks around with everybody.
My vajayjay is painting. A little montage. It's so funny.
But it was a cool moment for them to do for somebody like that, where they didn't even have to mention it.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Wow, it's now somber in here. Sorry.
Dude.
Sorry about that.
We gotta pour one out for Heath.
Yeah.
Pour out a 40 for Heath.
Go see The Four Feathers. It's a British movie, so it's in the atonement realm. It's a good movie.
All right. So let's go ahead and call this a night. We're going to see... bye.
After we talk about their Only Blood and then Juno, probably the week after.
I just want to let you guys know that most of what you heard actually didn't happen. This is just something that I've written. And...
I'm sorry.
They're both dead, actually. Don't mind them laughing.
We died.
The cast who played them is laughing, but Adam and Tony are no longer with us.
The farewell cast.
That's why it's not called Fanboy Smackdown anymore.
That's right. Be the backseat producer.
The fanboys have been smacked down. No, it will still be that for a couple of weeks until we get everything else done. But yeah, we wanted to throw that out there, and we'll probably announce it again because, like we said, most people probably haven't listened this far.
Right.
But when we get Juno or there, we'll be blood. Most people. Will
see. Yeah, I have a feeling, especially Juno. I think.
Yeah,
I think
Juno
we'll get
probably the most popular of the Oscars.
Yeah.
Movies.
Yes.
Everybody like that one.
Yeah. All right. So we'll see you guys next time. You know how to get a hold of us in all the myriad of ways. I'm not going to go through them now because I just don't feel like it.
See ya.
I still can't remember that phone number, man.
That's okay. The phone number's gone. Oh. We lost it. We got a different one now.
Okay, good. Another one I don't have to remember.
Exactly. It's posted at the site. That's all you need. All right. See you guys next week.